Let no one deceive you by any means.
I think a militant atheist whose every action is about getting in or facing confrontational, the right voices and the non-stop. It's everywhere they go. There's disruption, there's argument, there's raised voices, angry dialogue, insults, controversy. Militant atheist.
Will be deceived. There is no need for you to be deceived. Christ said, Jesus indeed deceived. Don't be deceived by Jesus.
Why would God need to test anybody's faith?
Yo. All right, it works. You're listening to Reepso Radio. I'm not on Uber today because I don't know what's wrong with their feed, but some reason I can't pick it up. Maybe they changed the password on me. I said something offended them, and they changed the password on me. It's probably what happened. My fucking chair won't work. How you doing today? I'm great. I'm wonderful. I was just searching Judge Mark Martin again. And when I first started searching Judge Mark Martin, a couple weeks ago, last week, 2 weeks ago, there was maybe 8 million results. And today when I search Judge Mark Martin, I get 41 million results. What do you know about that? You want to know why that is? Let me sign out and see if I can get some real results here. Because Mark Martin, he pissed people off. Made them angry. Here's some of the first search in results I find. I'm outraged to listen to an American Muslim, Judge Mark Martin. let me see. Where did Judge Mark Martin go to school? Judge Mark Martin, the counter-jihad report. What else do we got here? Mark Martin scolds victim who insulted Islam. Hey, that's my own link. Yeah. People are pissed off about Mark Martin if you haven't heard about him yet. He's the one that the Saints Revenge went to court, he dismissed the charges. I was going to call Ernest today. I wonder if he'll pick up the phone. Think he will? I could call him right now. Let's call him right now and see what he does. See if he picks the phone up or not. I'll have to tell him he's on the air right away, though.
Please state your name after the tone, and Google Voice will try to reach.
Damn. Thanks for calling. Please leave me a message.
I'm leaving you a message. Call me back. All right? I'm on the radio, too. Oh, whoa. Why is it ringing? Why is it ringing if I'm leaving you a message? The hell's going on with that? I just wanted to ring a couple times. It's kind of...
Yeah, what's up?
Hello, did I just get your voicemail's voicemail?
Maybe. What's up?
I'm just calling to see what you were doing. I'm on the radio right now.
You're what?
I'm on the radio. Are you busy?
Like right now?
Yeah, right now. Are you busy?
Yes, I am. Okay, I can call you back if that's
cool. Call me later.
All right. On the radio line?
Yeah, wherever, whatever. Yeah, not on my cell phone, but yeah, on the radio line.
All right. Send me a text on Facebook, and I'll know the number.
Okay.
I just kind of finishing up work.
Gotcha.
So. All right, bye-bye.
Okay, late. All right, so I'll send him a text with the number. He doesn't know it by heart. Damn it. And hopefully he'll give me a call back. You seen the gas prices? What the hell's going on with the gas prices? I was listening to... there's a guy who does a show with American Heathen. His name's David Too. And he does a show on Monday nights on Shocknet Radio, and I was listening to him last week, and he was talking about the gas prices, and then, the day after the show, the gas prices went out, yeah, crazy. What's my phone number? 315-593-16-4737. It's like $4.23 a gallon or something like that, around that here. Is that crazy? That's crazy. Oh, Anna, you're not that late. You're cool. No sweat. We'll forgive you since you're here every week. Let me look and see what the prices are right now. I'll go, see, Bay Area gas prices. I don't even want to know. It's funny because they'll go really high and really low here. Okay, lowest gas prices. Looks like Arco at $4.11. Yeah, $4.11 in all parts of the Bay Area, because they have the Bay Area is like split into the West Bay, East Bay, South Bay, North Bay. Lowest gas prices in San Jose, which is the South Bay, is $4.09. And they have the highest prices somewhere, but not on this one, I guess. Let me see. It goes anywhere from $4.09. I see a $4.33, $4.31, $4.41. Shit. If you look in San Francisco, they usually have the highest gas prices. There's a $4.49. And that's for regular unleaded. That's the lowest price, you know, the cheapest grade. We have 87 octane, I think, is the grade here. I don't know what you have in your state. Something similar, I'm assuming. Yeah, $4.11. And they say it's going to get to $5. Yeah. And then I have a, did I print this out or not? Someone's talking about the gas prices being fueled by Wall Street's greed. Isn't that weird? Yeah, that's strange. Who would have guessed that? Not me. Oh, here we go. I also have the 49 foods that are bad for you I'm going to talk about today. And I have a podcast that I did for The Angry Atheist that I'm going to play during the second hour. It's a pastor. He's a current pastor who has become an atheist. And I think you'll find it very interesting, because I found it interesting. And you know, I know you all think exactly like me. Yeah. Okay, get back to work. Yeah. Jeremy, take a nap before you go back to work. Jeremy's a workaholic. Okay, this is from Bernie Sanders, who's an independent senator from Vermont. He was elected to the U.S. Senate in 2006 after serving 16 years in the House of Representatives. He's the longest-serving independent member of Congress, and he says gas prices approaching $4 a gallon on average are causing severe economic pain for millions of Americans. Prices spiked 5% in the last month alone. Crude oil prices stood at $108 a barrel on Friday, up from only double digits at the beginning of the month. What's the cause? Forget what you have may have read about the laws of supply and demand. Oil and gas prices all have almost nothing to do with economic fundamentals. According to the Energy Information Administration, the oil supply and gasoline is higher today than it was 3 years ago, when the national average for a gallon of gasoline was just $1.90. Meanwhile, the demand for oil in the U.S. is at its lowest level since April of 1997. Is big oil to blame? Yes, partly. Big oil companies have been gouging customers for years. They have made almost $1 trillion in profits over the past decade, in part thanks to ridiculous federal subsidies and tax loopholes. He has proposed legislation to end those pointless giveaways. I don't know why we still have loopholes for these frickin' guys. Jeremy says he can quit anytime he wants. He can quit his job anytime he wants and be homeless. We can all do that. don't brag about that. We can all do that. But there's another reason for the wild rise in gas prices. The culprit is Wall Street. Jeez, I never would have guessed it. Yeah. Speculators are raking in profits by gambling in the loosely regulated commodity markets for gas and oil. A decade ago, speculators controlled only about 30% of the futures market. Today, Wall Street speculators control nearly 80% of the market. Many of those people buying and selling oil in the commodity markets will never use a drop of oil. They are not airlines or trucking companies who will use the fuel in the future. The only function of the speculators is to make as much money as they can as quickly as they can. Another big surprise. It really pisses me off, because I am of the opinion that the gas prices are what screwed our economy up. And I think they have the potential to screw our economy up again. Yeah, sanctions on Iran. Yeah, Iran is being a pain in the ass. I wish Iran would just chill out, man. And I can't really say that we should tell them they can't have a nuclear weapon. I mean, we're kind of hypocritical. I mean, I know it's not in our best interest probably, but I mean, can you really say that? Say that you can't have a nuclear weapon. We've got one, but you can't have one. Is it really right for us to say that and expect them to go, oh, okay. But they could chill out a little bit. Would make it easier if they would just chill out with the saber rattling and the, you know, trying to be badass, trying to prove themselves. It's like a pissing contest. A pointless pissing contest. Oh, ow. Sorry, dude. Was in codeine something. What was he doing? Yeah, Al's funny. Let me see. Al was... Oh, I wonder what's wrong with him. He was in a coma. Still recovering, just woke up. Have a good show. Okay. So Al's going to be out today. I don't know. Oh. Yeah, get to work, Anna. Get to work. 1,800 words. Get to work. Anyways, he says he's seen the raw documents to prove the role of speculators. Commodity Futures Trading Commission records showed in the summer of 2008 when gas prices spiked to more than $4 a gallon, speculators were overwhelmingly controlling the crude oil futures market. The commission, which supposedly represents the interest of the American people, had kept the information hidden from the public for nearly 3 years. That alone is an outrage. People have the right to know what exactly caused gas prices to skyrocket in 2008. I thought they did an investigation on that. Just stay out of their business and let Israel deal with Iran. Yeah, let those guys have it out. It's funny because Israel's so small, but they really can't deal with their own shit, can't they? I mean, we've helped them, but... I think they... Were they really the ones that were killing those Iranian scientists? The ones that were working on the nuclear weapons, or were they not? I don't know. I didn't hear about the rest of that. I just heard they were accused of it, setting magnetic bombs on their cars and driving away and on a motorcycle and then blowing them up. Even those inside the oil industry have admitted that speculation is driving up the price of gasoline. The CEO of ExxonMobil, Rex Tillerson, told a Senate hearing last year that speculation was driving up the price of a barrel of oil by as much as 40%. The general counsel of Delta Airlines, Ben Hurst, and the experts at Goldman Sachs also said excessive speculation is causing oil prices to spike by 40%. Even Saudi Arabia, the largest exporter of oil in the world, told the Bush administration back in 2008 during the last major spike in oil prices that speculation was responsible for about $40 of a barrel of oil. Just last week, Commissioner Bart Chilton of the Only Commodity Futures Trading Commission members looking out for consumers, calculated how much extra drivers are being charged as a result of Wall Street speculation. If you drive a relatively fuel-efficient vehicle, such as a Honda Civic, you pay an extra $7.30 every time you fill your tank. For larger vehicles, such as a Ford F-150, drivers pay an extra $14.56 for each fill-up. That works out to more than $750 a year, going directly from your wallet or pocketbook to the Wall Street speculators. I'm not real thrilled about that. I'm one of those people that has to drive to get to work because the public transit system here is kind of split into pieces, and I work in between two of those pieces or on another piece. I live on one piece and work in another piece of those pieces. So you can't just take one transit, you know, system there. You have to split them up, and it makes it take forever for me to get to work. It would take forever. Right now it takes me a half hour if I drive. It would probably take me at least 2 hours, I would think, if I had to take the public transit from my house. Screw that. Yeah. It doesn't have to work this way. The current spike in oil and gasoline prices was avoidable under the Wall Street Reform Act that Congress passed in 2010. The Commodities Futures Trading Commission was ordered to impose strict limits on the amount of oil that Wall Street speculators could trade in the energy futures market. The regulators dragged their feet. Finally, after months and months of law-breaking delays, the commissioner in October adopted a rule. It was a weak version of a proposal that might have put meaningful limits on the number of futures and swaps contracts a single trader could hold. Even the watered-down regulation adopted by the industry-friendly commission was challenged in court. The Financial Markets Association and the International Swaps and Derivatives Association wanted free rein to continue unregulated gambling in the oil markets. Someone in the chat has someone else yelling at them. Tell them to stop yelling at you. Yell back at them louder. So today, Wall Street once again is laughing all the way to the bank. Once again, federal regulators should move aggressively
and excessive oil speculation. We must do everything we can to lower gas prices so they reflect the fundamentals of supply and demand and bring needed relief to the American people. Can't someone please do something about this? President Obama, please, someone. The president pretty much said his hands are tied from what I've heard. I think that's a load of crap. I think there's things he could do. And I would assume he's doing those things maybe behind the scenes, because if he doesn't get a rein on these gas prices, that's going to be a major issue that the Republicans are going to use against him. And I don't think he wants them using anything against him. I hope that he doesn't have the feeling that no matter what Republican gets nominated, that he'll have an easy ride, because he needs to not slack if he wants to win. Just like we still need to vote for the presidency, even though the Republicans are idiots and we can't just assume they're not going to get in, because the people who would get them in are going to vote no matter what. Yeah, they're going to keep voting. They're not going to just become complacent and sit back. They're going to keep voting. So we have to vote too. Smart people have to vote. Otherwise, you get a big surprise and you go, oh, wait a minute. How the hell did that happen? Yeah. Did you hear about Kid Rock playing at Romney's support at his fundraiser or his campaign, whatever event? So I guess Kid Rock is a Romney supporter, it would be safe to say. So if you have Megadeth or Dave Mustaine supporting Santorum and you have Kid Rock supporting Romney, fucking idiot. I already hated Kid Rock, though. He's a dick. He sucks. He's no talent. I think we should have Dave Mustaine and Kid Rock have a duel. They can have it out for who's the stupidest fucking idiot Christian who supports a Republican for the title match. The dumbest vocalist to support a Republican. They can have it out. We'll give them swords or something. They could have it out with whips, whip each other to death. I wonder who would win, because Dave Mustaine's not really a tough guy. He's kind of a wuss. He's kind of whiny. While talking shit about him now, I used to like him. Now I don't like him that much. He fucking pisses me off. Stinking bullshit. And Kid Rock was always a dumbass. Was he with Pamela Anderson at one time? How? I don't know how. What the hell's wrong with her? She must have self-esteem issues or something. I can understand. Tommy Lee's cool, though. But, yeah, maybe she got over her self-esteem issues, and that's when she got with Tommy Lee. But before that, she had issues, so she got with Kid Rock. Because she didn't really think that much of herself, and she didn't really care if she was with a fucking stupid, no-talent motherfucker like that who likes Republicans. That could be it. I'm not a psychiatrist, though. I can't say for sure. I'm just speculating. Pentagon report released Tuesday in the military's Dover mortuary finds that not only did some remains of U.S. troops end up in landfills, but so did remains from the 9/11 attacks. Dover Air Force Base, where the remains of the deceased U.S. Armed Services first arrived home from overseas. How the Dover Port mortuary handled military remains has caused an uproar last November, and the news report says that much the same has happened to the remains from the Pentagon attack and the Shanksville, Pennsylvania crash site on September 11, 2001. Nearly 3,000 victims of the 9/11 attacks, 224 were killed at the Pentagon and in Pennsylvania. The report says that in 2002, some identified and already cremated remains from those attacks were placed in sealed containers, handed over to a biomedical waste contractor, and then transported in containers and incinerated a second time. Jeremy says, I'm not a doctor, I just play one in the bedroom. Yeah, your girlfriend must like that. It's kind of weird. At least you didn't say, I'm not a sheep herder, I just play one in the bedroom. That would be worse. The assumption on the part of the mortuary, the report says, was that nothing was left. But then mortuary management found that some residual material had in fact remained after the second cremation, and that the contractor had not disposed of it in the landfill. Oh, the contractor had disposed of it in the landfill. And according to the report, the landfill disposition was not disclosed in the contractual disposal agreement. Are you getting confused? I'm getting confused now. Too many D words in there. Confusion over, confusion over just exactly what words final disposition meant was one of the reasons that unidentified 9/11 remains ended up in a landfill. Okay. Well, I don't know. I stopped playing when I was a kid. Yeah. I don't know. Playing doctor is more fun when you're an adult, I think. You can get in a lot more trouble, though. A lot more trouble. The potential for, trouble is there. A lot stronger when you're an adult playing doctor than when you're a kid playing doctor. You get more than just a restriction or whatever. I don't know what to do about. What are they going to do about this anyways if they find out these people were put in a landfill? Are they going to dig everybody up? Is that what they're going to do? Did you lose the sound? It says I'm still broadcasting, so. Somebody lost the sound. You can't dig them all up. Just put a marker there and call it a memorial, too, and go with that. You're listening to Reepso Radio on godlessradio.net and Free Thought Radio sometime or another. Hello, Free Thought Radio. Thank you for playing the show. And I'm not going to thank godlessradio.net because that's me, and it'd be kind of just lame if I thanked myself. How about let's take a break. And I'm going to come back with some foods that are bad for you, 49 foods that are bad for you that you shouldn't be eating. And some of them you would think that they would be okay for you to eat, but they're not okay. They're bad for you.
Hi, this is Reap, and you're listening to Godless Radio. Godlessradio.net. And you know what that means.
That means he's an open advocate of atheism.
Thank you, Pat Robertson. We never would have figured that out without you. You tool. Pat Robertson, man, I hate that guy too. He's an idiot. A huge idiot. Some of the shit he says is so crazy. So crazy that mere words cannot describe it. In New Zealand... Oh, you listen to Reepso Radio, by the way. Reepso Radio on godlessradio.net and Free Thought Radio. And next hour, I'm going to play a interview that I did for the Angry Atheist podcast with a pastor who is leaving the church. He hasn't left yet. He's going to leave, and he's got some pretty interesting stuff to say, and it is an interesting story. At least I think it is, and since I think it's interesting, you must think it's interesting, too. So I assume... The New Zealand Medical Journal's new list of non-essential, energy-dense, nutritionally deficient, a.k.a. needn't foods, aimed at helping educate obese people about foods to avoid, includes a number of unusual suspects on the Do Not Eat If You Are Dieting list. Coming in at number one, the list is alphabetical, not in ascending or descending order of value, is alcohol, followed by biscuits, butter, cakes, and chocolate. But there are a few surprises among the 49 dietary offenders. I'm going to read the list to you, too, all 49 of them, because I care about your health that much. I do. I'm worried. I'm worried about you. I'm worried that you're not healthy enough. Don't smoke. It's bad for you. I'll smoke for you. Okay. Just lost my page. I'm reading this list while I'm eating juji fruits. How ironic is that? Let me see. This talks about the different ones here. I'll go through that later. Number one, alcoholic drinks. Number two, biscuits. Number three, butter, lard. Number four, cakes. Number five, chocolate. Number six, coconut cream. Number seven, condensed milk. Oh, I drink a lot of condensed milk, too. I just pop open a can of that and down it. It's good. Cordial, whatever the hell that is. Corn chips. Cream. Crisps, including vegetable crisps, desserts and puddings. Desserts and pudding? What the fuck desserts? Isn't that like cakes and chocolate and shit like that? Donuts. Uh-oh, I just got done with a dozen donuts, too. Drinking chocolate Milo. Ooh, who drinks that? Energy drinks. Uh-oh, I'm drinking one of those right now, too. Flavored milk, milkshakes, fruit tinned in syrup. Damn, I just ate some peaches that were in syrup. Fried food. Frozen yogurt, fruit juice, except tomato juice and unsweetened black currant juice. Who the hell drinks black currant juice, and what the hell is that? Currant juice? You know what that is? Anybody in the chat know what that is? Creepy. Yeah, if you're losing the feed, I can put a link in the chat for the feed. Let me see if I can put it back in there again. Might work better. Hey, what's going on? Now it ain't going to do shit for me. Stupid chat. Glucose. High-fat crackers. Honey. Hot chips. Ice cream. Jam. Marmalade. Mayonnaise. Black currant. What the hell is black currant? This chat's being a bitch. There we go. There. You guys in the chat, there's another link. It might be, might not be a problem dropping the feed. I don't know what's going on. Muesli bars? What the hell is Muesli? I don't even know what the hell half of this is. How am I going to know if I'm going to be healthy or not if I don't even know what the fuck it is? Muesli? Muesli? What the hell is a muesli? Muffins. Nuts roasted in fat or oil. Jesus Christ, you can't eat anything. Pastries, pies, popcorn with butter or oil, quiche. That's a good one. I don't eat any of that crap. Reduced cream. Damn, I eat a can. I drink a can of that too every morning. Regular luncheon sausage. Regular powdered drinks. Regular salami. As opposed to what? Super salami? What other kind of salami is there? Regular sausages. As opposed to what? Maple sausages? What kind of sausages? I gotta find out what these people are talking about. Regular soft drinks, okay? But I heard that if you drink diet soft drinks, your risk of heart attack goes up. Jeremy says, I live on beer and red meat. RSVP for my funeral. Can I do your funeral, Jeremy? I'm already ordained. I'm dying to do somebody's funeral, so to speak. Fruit roll-ups, sour cream. Oh, man, I love sour cream on a taco. Anna gave me the link to the black currant thing. Black currants are lovely. Lovely? I haven't eaten. You're ruining dinner. Sorry. You're not going to be able to eat any of that crap, Randy. You're not going to be able to eat now. After we read this list, nobody's going to be able to eat shit. We're not going to be eating anything. Sweets and lollies. What the hell, lollies? What the hell in New Zealand? What the fuck kind of language do they speak there? Syrups such as golden syrup, maple syrup. Any breakfast cereal with more than 15 grams of sugar. Does that mean corn pops? I use frozen food and pot and then cake and chips. In that order? I mean pot. Pot roast? Is that what you're talking about? Whole milk? Damn it! And yogurt type products with more than 10 grams of sugar. I don't eat yogurt. Yogurt's disgusting. You guys get that list? And Slim Jims. We make those in Troy, Ohio. Hell yeah. I can't find a secular pastor anywhere else. Okay, good. Yeah, you'll hear this pastor is going to be very interesting. Very, very interesting. So you guys can't eat any of this crap. You can't eat this stuff no more. Sorry. But I did notice that juji fruits are not on the list. Neither is red licorice. So there you go. They have this, have you guys tried that new licorice? It's grape licorice. It's good. It's purple. Needless to say, it's purple. It's good. Yeah, he said while he drank his Red Bull. Red Bull's good, man. I like Red Bull. You know what else works? Is you know that five hour energy drink they have? That stuff's good. Works good, too. It lives up to this advertising, which is rare. Honey made the list at the 23rd spot. You long used alternative medical practices in cooking. It turns out honey itself doesn't offer much in the way of nutrition. It's a good source of natural sugar. This is so you don't get fat, too. I don't want you guys getting fat. Energy drinks, which a few people think are health food, but are nonetheless consumed by athletes, trainers, other people around the world on a daily basis, coming at number 15. The Sideshow recently wrote about the Buddhist monk billionaire who founded 5-Hour Energy Drink. But we were just talking about that. He says he has one every morning and another dose before exercising. That stuff's good, though. I mean, it tastes kind of nasty, but it's good. Yeah, Randy lives on that stuff. Don't live on it, though. Number 18 on the list of fried food is fried foods. However, the Sideshow recently reported that in a new study claiming that fried foods themselves aren't the problem. It's the oil you use to cook them in. Yeah, we all knew that. I'll tell you what. Now, I don't know if it lasts 5 hours, but it really, it picks you up a little bit. And then you don't feel like you're coming down off of, freaking, you know, crashing after it wears off. It just kind of just goes away and just kind of back to normal again. It's a miracle. It's a miracle substance. No, it's good. Did you guys hear about the burning of the Quran at the military base? Did you guys hear about that? Did this link that Ann gave me, did it work? The Anna link to the Quran thing? I can't find it now. There it is. Let's see what this stuff is. Oh, Anna, you're trying to send me to a website that's not part of that. Shame on you. Okay, remove this frame. I hate it when they do that. Anna, that link didn't work for crap. All it says is black. I got the Wikipedia page for black. Okay, fine. Here, I'll read it. Black. Black is the color of objects that do not emit or reflect any light or any part of the visible spectrum. They absorb all such frequencies of light. Although black is sometimes described as a chromatic or hueless color, in practice it can be considered a color, as in expressions like black cat or black paint. Don't drink black, the color black. Oh, and Ernest never got back to me. Sucker. Hey, what's up with the Facebook, the poke thing on Facebook? It came back. Why the fuck did they bring the poke thing back? I don't want people poking me. It's weird. It's creepy. I got dudes poking me, and I don't like it when guys poke me. I prefer not to be poked by a guy. No offense, guys, but yeah. Okay, anyways, the burning the Quran thing, I mean, kind of pisses me off because those Afghans are so picked up. That's just pissed off about any fucking thing you do, any little thing you do. We apologize for it. They're still pissed off. Man, what a bunch of pussies. I'm like, oh, you burned our book. And we're going to kill some people. I mean, it actually, somebody got a gun and went and shot some people. They shot two Americans just because of this burning the Quran thing. Oh, what? Holy crap. What the fuck is the problem with people who feel like they need to stand up for their God, because their God can't stand up for himself or itself? What the fuck is up? If God was real, I'm pretty fucking sure he could stand up for himself. Pretty sure he could hold his own. You know? It's like Ernest being attacked for that Muhammad zombie thing. I'm pretty sure that Muhammad's God, right? I don't even keep track of Islam that well. He's got some pull. He's got some power. He's got some pull, right? Can't he stand up for him fucking self? Does he really need you to protect him from anything? Oh, it's a sharp berry because I'm allergic to elderberries. Too much of anything. Too much of anything is bad for you. That's right, Anna. Everything in moderation. I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't get what this. It's like when you say something about Jesus, people go, oh, don't you say anything bad about Jesus, man. Well, you know what? I'm pretty sure the guy can stand up for himself. And even if I did say something that harmed him in some way, can he heal himself? Can he just spit on himself and heal himself? Besides that, even if I said something that hurt him so bad that he died from embarrassment or died from being insulted, he'd come back. It's not like he's not going to come back. It's not like you can kill him. Son of a bitch just keeps coming back. You know, it's not like you can do him any real harm. What's Jesus going to start crying? It's not like he's your little brother, people. All right? It's not like he's your little brother that you have to stand up for on the playground so people don't pick on him. It's like, what was I telling somebody? That it's like somebody saying something bad about the FBI and you feel like you have to go and do something to protect the FBI because they're being insulted, you know? The FBI can take care of itself. It'll just fucking arrest your ass and throw you in jail as a terrorist and never let you have a trial. Yeah. Yeah, and besides that, there, excellent point, Sluggy Can. What the hell name is that, Sluggy Can? He would have to be real in the first place. He's not even real. You can't hurt imaginary things. If you call the guy in the Lucky Charms box, if I call that little leprechaun dude a dick, he's not going to be hurt. I guess that's what I should do. I kind of like Lucky Charms. Next time somebody says something bad about Lucky Charms or the Trix Rabbit, I'm going to beat the living shit out of them. Nobody talks about my breakfast cereal like that. No one. That's it for you. Oh, Canada's in Canada. Okay, gotcha. Sorry, I'm a little dim-witted today. I think I might be mildly retarded today. The Chinese government isn't getting rid of one of its one-child policy. Oh, sorry, isn't getting rid of its one-child policy currently in place. It's just making it sound better. China's Communist Party newspaper, The People's Daily. I love in China, they call everything the People's something. It's like the People's something, like the People's Supermarket, the People's Dry Cleaners, the People's Telephone Company, the People's Jail, because the people own everything. It reports the government will revamp its abrasive-sounding slogans surrounding policy. People's Daily cites several examples of harsh slogans, including those which sometimes even threaten criminal acts. The newly instituted program, slugged the face-washing project, will offer a more proactive slogan to help enforce the policy, which has been in place since 1979. China claims the policy, which applies to those living in urban areas, affects approximately 35.9% of the population and has resulted in an estimated 400 million fewer births since first being implemented. 400 million. If it looks like poo and it smells like poo, it's probably poo. You mean the bear? Poo? Poo bear? Some examples of the more offensive slogans currently in use include, if you don't receive the tubal ligation surgery by the deadline, your house will be demolished. Oh, that might be a little harsh. We would rather scrape your womb than allow you to have a second child. Holy crap. Christ! Kill all your family members if you don't follow the rule. The Chinese, that's the people's slogan. That's the people's punishment. You're going to get the people's punishment. You have another kid, kill all your family members. You don't have that fucking, you have your tubes tied? Your house is demolished. Sorry, we don't want to do it, but you're going to make us. Oh, here's another one. And once you get captured, an immediate tubal ligation will be done. Should you escape, we'll hunt you down. If you attempt a suicide, we'll offer you either the rope or a bottle of poison. Have a nice day. Wow. Damn, those Chinese aren't fucking around. No wonder it's an estimated 400 million fewer births. They're not fucking around with that, are they? It's just me, or is that funny? The new, less offensive slogans, replacing the more callous ones, will reportedly be seeking to avoid offending the public and stoking social tensions. I mentioned you're a little bit tense, right? A chick misses her period, she's going to be fucking stressed the hell out. She's like, Jesus Christ, I think I might be pregnant. Don't tell anybody because my house is really nice. I don't want it demolished. Heard about the study that's showing one ape species can end pregnancy at will when a new alpha male takes control. Imagine a pro-life woman could do that. Yeah, really. They do have a concession if your first child is a girl. Let me see. China's one-child policy has faced criticism from around the world. In addition to more obvious concerns about civil liberties, the policy has reportedly had the unintended effect of many families aborting female babies until a male child is conceived. That trend has resulted in 118 boys being born for every 100 girls, which has contributed to males outnumbering females in China by an estimated 30 to 40 million. Tough getting a date there. China is also bracing itself for an unprecedented growth in its senior population over the next several decades. As of today, people over the age of 60 make up only 13% of China's population, but that percentage is expected to swell to over 30% by 2050. The earth will be blown up by then anyways. Who cares? People's Daily offered some examples of these softer messages the government will issue, including caring for the girl means caring for the future of the nation. And please get rid of the alcohol and cigarettes before you plan to be a father. How the fuck is that going to do any good? The other ones are working way better. I mean, I don't know if I agree with the wording, but yeah, at least they're honest. These two ain't going to do shit. People are going to go, oh, it's cool to have babies now. That's what they're going to do. Did I tell you Kid Rock has no talent? God, I hate that dude. Sucks. Sucks a lot. Okay, I went through that. China's one policy. I got through that. Oh, I got one more news article I want to do, too. I guess Ernest is going to call me back the flaky bastard. And Los Angeles officials have ruled the death of a 10-year-old girl who got into a fight last week will be a homicide. Joanna Ramos, a fifth-grade student at Willard Elementary School, died of blunt force trauma to the head 6 hours after an altercation with a female classmate that lasted less than a minute, said Long Beach Police spokesman Sergeant Rico Fernandez. Authorities have identified the other girl, who is 11, as well as several onlookers. They are continuing to investigate what happened. There are several accounts of what transpired based on interviews with witnesses, but we have not concluded the precise motive. In a statement, police say Ramos and her unidentified classmate had challenged each other to a planned fight. When their school session ended Friday, the two girls met in a nearby alley next to the church and began hitting each other, Fernandez said. The fight was brief. No weapons were involved, authorities said. According to Long Beach Unified School District spokesman Chris Echelou, Ramos finished her regular school session at 2:12 and was supposed to remain on campus to begin her scheduled after-school program at 2:30. We believe the altercation occurred during that 15-minute window because she apparently left and returned to the session, which involves help with homework and academic-related activity. After the fight, the girls left and went their separate ways. Ramos stayed in the afternoon session for about an hour, did not exhibit any signs of physical trauma. When she did complain of not feeling well, her cousin picked her up, but they had no indication she was involved in an altercation. No indication of altercation. Only when she was at the hospital did we get word about the altercation. There's no indication that bullying was a factor. Once the investigation and autopsy are complete, the findings will be turned over to Los Angeles. No arrests have been made. On Monday, grief counselors were brought in. And that is just a sad goddamn story, isn't it? Yeah, it's just sad. 10 years old, fighting over something stupid, I'm sure. What's the matter with you kids? Sheesh. When I was 10 years old, well, I didn't get into fights like that. I just got beat up. I just let them beat me up. It's a safe thing to do. I had a lighter. Oh, there it is. Listen to Reapso Radio. And you know what? I'm going to take a break, play this request for Anna, Blue Oyster Cult, and then I'm going to play a interview I had with the pastor for The Angry Atheist. If you're not listening to The Angry Atheist, please start. It's pretty interesting, I think. I mean, I might be a little bit biased because I do the show. I host the show, but it's interesting. You can find the show at angryatheist.info. It's not really that angry, though. Don't let the title fool you. And I've had some very interesting guests, if you look through the list. This is number 64. So I've done 64 of them. God damn, 64 of them. That's a lot. You need to be married before you can get a license for the baby. The children are born licensed. Huh. Get a license before you have a baby. That's might be a good idea. Overpopulation is a issue. So it needs to be dealt with. But I don't know if don't have a fucking your tubes tied or we destroy your house is probably the best approach. Yeah. The one-child policy has failed, but it has resulted in 400 million less births, or so they say. Okay, anyways, let me play this and then listen up because it's really good. This interview is good, trust me. Would I lie to you? I might, but I'm not lying today. You're listening to Reapso Radio on reapradio.net, reapsoradio.com, godlessradio.net, and Free Thought Radio.
Good evening, godless sodomites.
We're going to pray, Father in heaven. Let your anointing flow out over the this prosperity anointing and let them see a mighty miracle and mighty deliverance. In Jesus' precious name I pray.
Think you didn't have any brains at all?
I have so got brains.
Well, why don't you use them?
One thing I've learned is God is Satan himself. They don't realize God don't really matter.
You've tuned in to yet another podcast from the Angry Atheist.
I'm attempting conversation here with you.
You're gonna eat your babies!
You're right on the edge of your miracle. Get ready.
Here he comes.
Amen.
Hello and welcome to the Angry Atheist Podcast. Glad you made it. I'm going to tell you at the beginning of the show this time, make sure you pass the podcast around and share it with your friends and neighbors. And on this podcast, we have a very interesting guest. He's a current pastor who's become an atheist. And that's all I'm going to give away. The rest of it is for you to hear on your own. We won't be using his real name for obvious reasons. Duh. All right, let's begin. Oh, I have you introduce yourself as much as you want to introduce yourself, I guess.
Okay. Well, I am the atheist pastor on Twitter, and it's something that I started just recently in terms of writing about my thoughts. And I guess I can give a generality of my story. I have been a pastor in ministry and missionary work and evangelism for about 25 years, in the sense that I was, while still in college, became very involved in doing evangelistic work, and started preaching at a young age, and carried that right into a ministerial position right out of college. And my wife and I were married right after we graduated and went into full-time ministry and continued in that up until somewhat recently. But during that time, we started having doubts and eventually ended up as both being atheists and started looking for a way to build a new life outside of ministry or outside of church employment. And so that's where we are now.
Can you tell me a little bit more about how you and your wife came to be atheists at the same time?
It came to me first.
Yeah.
It started with various doubts and questions about what I was saying. And probably the biggest thing for me was the prediction of the end of the world. And in our particular denomination, there was a lot of activity around the year 2000. Yeah. And so and it was biblical, man. I could give you a Bible study and just show you just plain as day that we can expect on the authority of the Bible that Jesus is going to return to this world in or around the year 2000.
Yeah.
And the funny thing about it was, just a little interesting thing about Christian thinking, is that, you know, we know that Jesus was, quotes, born in 3 BC.
Yeah.
And so that would make the year 2000 or 2000 years from his birth the year 1997. Well, guess what happened in 1997? I don't know if you remember, but the Hale-Bopp comet showed up.
Yeah.
And I was in my church and it hit me one night. You know what? There's a verse in the book of Matthew that says there's a sign of the Son of Man. And I thought, this comet is it. You know, wow. And so I shared it with my people and I believed it. Well, obviously Jesus didn't come in 2000, and
I haven't seen him.
You're right. And so I had that really started some soul searching in my mind, because if there was anything that had been biblically or fit the standards of biblical interpretation for my confession, it was that theory or that teaching.
That was what you were waiting for, right?
Yeah. It made sense, and it fit, and it seemed to be completely honest and fair with the Bible as a whole and all of our hermeneutical principles and all of that stuff. And so when it didn't happen, then I began to really wonder how it could be that we could be so right and honest and true and fair and come up with something that was completely wrong. And so that's probably the first crack in the veneer in my mind. And then not too long after that, I started doing some graduate work and took some classes in the history of Christianity. And my particular religious denomination has sees itself very important in religious history and ultimately being God's special people here on this world and everybody. And it's our calling to go out and invite to bring everybody into our church.
Yeah. Are you trying to save everybody? I mean, is that the
phrase? Yes. Okay. Well, not just save them, but I guess you would say super save them.
Oh.
In the sense that you know, there are Christians, and then we are the even better Christians.
New and improved Christians.
Right. So it's a very proud position to take. And as I started reading the source material, or and becoming acquainted with various theologians in the history of Christianity and how Christian thought has developed and evolved through the centuries, it became quite clear to me that the singular story of Christianity that my church taught was very narrow and very ignorant. And so that compounded my doubts. And in fact, at one point I was sitting in class and and we were talking about the Thomas Aquinas and the great chain of being, and I realized that that was my worldview, that I was a medievalist,
yeah.
And living in a worldview that is more than 1,000 years old, or 1,000 years old roughly, it was a real shock to me. And
wow.
So doubts then built really fast after
that.
Yeah,
I can imagine after that point, because that's kind of a wake up right there, isn't it? I mean,
yeah, it was. And then I got, then the thing that fully gave me confidence to reject Christianity and reject the idea of the existence of God is understanding the development of the modern mind, of the scientific theory, and how in the 17th and 18th centuries the world's best minds were trying to square religion with this new way of thinking.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
They didn't wake up someday and say, "Oh, we're gonna be a bunch of bad boys and reject God and
stir
things up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I want to go sin.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna say there's no God. No, these guys, even like Voltaire, they wanted to understand God and they applied it systematically, and at the end of the day they came up with atheism. And so that's the thought process that really gave me confidence to rest assured that there is not a God out there, and that I am living my life, and I've got to make the best of every day and the best of this life, because we get one chance to live it. And so that's where we are. Yeah. My wife was a couple years or two or three years behind me in the process, and there was a point where I became convinced in my mind that God does not exist. And at that point, my wife was very much a fundamentalist believer. And I decided in my mind, in my heart, that I would take the secret of my disbelief to my grave rather than fight that war in the family.
Yeah.
But fortunately, she was very curious and is a seeker, which is a very Christian term. But she was a seeker, and she was continually asking me questions, and I basically let her down slowly. And there came a point one night where it dawned on her, and she gave up her belief in God just immediately. I struggled with it back and forth and back and forth, but with her, it was almost categorical. It was, you know, it happened very quickly.
Where do you think her doubt started? She was sensing what you were feeling, or do you think that it came on her own? Or,
well, I was telling her stories about the history of Christianity. And, you know, isn't it interesting this? And as I was telling her stories and about and the history of these various ideas and how they were argued about back and forth, and she kind of followed it. But the real climax for her came with reading the book. The book is Relics of Eden, that talks about the DNA and the non-coding DNA and how human DNA is similar to chimpanzee and orangutan and gorilla DNA and the fossils that are hidden in our DNA, and how we can trace the human family tree and the tree of life through these signatures in the DNA.
Yeah.
And she started reading that book, and I kind of told her what, in a nutshell, what the book was going to say, and that's what pushed her over the edge, so to speak.
It's interesting. Now, did you go through a period where you were kind of agnostic? Because usually people will go through a period of being kind of agnostic before they go become an atheist or consider themselves an atheist.
Yeah, I did. Right. I did not want to. Well, you know, first of all, there's a lot of animosity within the heart of a Christian, or at least there was in my heart, I should say, towards atheists, and so I just could not imagine
being one,
becoming one myself. It was unthinkable. So the midway was being agnostic and saying, well, if there is a God, there's no way that we have any capacity to know anything about this God, but there may be something out there. And you know, God is sort of a deistic agnostic is where I was.
Yeah. It took you how long did it take you? It took you 10 years? 11?
It took from the first doubts in around the year 2000 to probably about 2006.
Oh, okay.
That's when I really was well established in my mind as a non-believer.
Yeah.
I probably would not have, only to my closest friend did I actually admit that I was atheist. And but yeah, and so And at that point, I still was very much active in ministry for up until 2009, 2010. It's when I stopped preaching.
Now, what was your feeling on your job? I mean, on the ministry during that period, were you kind of like going through the motions? Were you was it a drag every day? Could you manage it without a problem? Or
I had no trouble in the sense that it's a language that you speak, and if a person is fluent in German. And you start speaking, you put your mind into the German mode, and you can speak it fluently if you have trained yourself to speak that language. And so for me to switch into believer language and preach the gospel to my people was like speaking another language. And so when I would go to church, I would turn that on, and you know, people were converted, people were baptized, people were saved, and so I did my job. They got their money's worth. Yeah. But it's kind of ironic, and you know, I kind of puzzle, and I did puzzle about it. You know, the ethics of doing that, and you know, obviously a Christian would be very scandalized by the idea of the pastor who's preaching to them and baptizing them and saving them is actually an atheist.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, the whole thing itself is a fraud. So
yeah. So what's the difference if you're an atheist or not? I mean, it's a fraud in the first place. Is that your point? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I'm robbing from the thieves.
Now, I've got to wonder, what are those people going to think when they find out that you're an atheist? Are they going to?
Well, they're not going to be happy. I can
admit
that.
I'm sorry. I don't know. One part of me says don't laugh, and the other part says that's damn funny. I can't help it.
Yeah.
You're right. I mean, it is. It's kind of you can't be accused of fraud when the whole thing that you're doing in the first place was kind of fraudulent.
That's right. It's like stealing the money from a drug dealer. Where's he going to go to complain?
Yeah, exactly.
But on the other hand, you know, these people are very sincere and take it very seriously. And so while I was an unbeliever and preaching, I honored their I did not advocate disbelief at all while in the pulpit. In other words, I could have started, quote, you know, teaching them or letting them in or you know, incorporating into my sermons that maybe the author of this was not really who he says he is, and
clues and hints and stuff like that.
Exactly. Yeah. But in fairness to them, I did none of that. I simply spoke their language and helped them in the path that they were going, and it's acting is really what it is. I was an actor, and I think I played my role quite well, and you know, people would all continually come up and say, "Wow, you know, Pastor, it was you know, the Lord really spoke through you today, and I've never been blessed so much," and on, you know, and I, you know, would thank them and tell them to thank the Lord.
Yeah. So you had a friend that you told, right?
Yes.
So yeah. It's good you had somebody at least to confide in, I guess, or just to bounce
right. And he was someone that I had gone to school with. And we kind of slowly confided in each other that we had both come to the same conclusions. And once we both knew where each other were, then we were able to talk very, very openly, very, very freely. Yeah. But it is, you know, it's a conversation that is just wrought with danger.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's quite a conversation to have.
Yeah, I imagine. Are you a little bit nervous about what the future holds for you?
Well, yes and no. We are very excited about the future because you know, they're a person's religion. It's amazing how many things it, or how many restrictions and things it puts on your mind and your life, that when it is gone, you realize that it's not there anymore. It's like when I had my wisdom teeth pulled out, I had no idea I had been in so much pain, but when those things were gone, it was like, wow, this is amazing. Yeah. And so we are very, very, very optimistic about the future. But at the same time, there's going to be a lot of weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth as our families are come to know the position that we have. Yeah. And that's our biggest puzzle right now, is how and when to tell the families. And we're right now, our goal is to protect our children from the negative impacts of religion. And we ourselves get buffeted by the family complaining that we're not faithful, and that we're, and you know, they're worried about us just because of some small changes that we've made in our lifestyle. I have no idea about the underlying theological or lack of belief.
Yeah.
But you know, we're having those conversations that your kids are going to grow up and they're going to go to hell, and you're losing your children, and they're gone, and God is going to hold you accountable for this. And what are you doing? Why don't you care about this? And so those are tough conversations to have, especially when they're with people that you love and
say, yeah.
And you know that the real answer to the question is devastating.
Yeah.
So what do you do? So that's the real puzzle that we're
facing. A little different when a stranger or someone, you know, that's not part of your family is telling you that you're dooming your children to hell, rather than your family members, and you have to explain to them why, what your thinking is behind what you're doing, you know?
Yeah. Well, and you can't explain to them what you're thinking.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you can't.
So I have to formulate a theological position that is defensible from the Bible, that allows us to do what we're doing within that context. And it's just,
did you manage to do that or no?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if it, I don't know how satisfying it is, but you know, we try. Yeah. trying to liberalize a fundamentalist is a very tall order.
Yeah.
But we have taken the position with our family that we are now, rather than being fundamentalists, we are liberal in our thinking, and we, in terms of salvation, it's person has to trust God and trust the power of the gospel, and if God is, you know, God has power to save, then God has power to save, and we don't have to worry about the naughty things that my children might be doing that have been prescribed by the church. But that's not very satisfying, but it's, you know, it's something.
Do you think that your family will be able to get over your change in beliefs, or do you think it'll be something that causes major fallout, or?
Well, you know, I don't know. I think there's going to be hell to pay.
Yeah, that's too bad.
It is impossible to overestimate the level of commitment to the religion that is in my family and my wife's family, and that we had ourselves. You know, it's not average. It's a very intense level. So that's going to be very, very difficult.
Yeah, challenging to say the least of it.
Yeah. So we keep putting it off.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Because it's going to be tough. But
and really, our goal is to get ourselves into a position where financially we are secure, and our future is secure, and that we cannot be harmed by the religious fall, by the fallout.
Yeah.
And at that point, then we're going to become transparent with everyone. Yeah. But right now, it's a very tenuous situation that we could lose a lot and be put in a very tough situation. So we have to do what we have to do.
Yeah, you have to do what you have to do. I mean, you got to make sure you're taken care of, especially with kids. You know.
Right.
Especially with kids. Now, so you haven't been pushing the kids have been religious or no? I mean, wasn't quite.
The kids all know our situation.
Oh, wow.
And
awesome. Yeah.
Interestingly, my son figured it out himself.
Nice.
He, when we told him, he said, well, you know, I kind of been thinking that way myself for 6 months. I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
And the other children one has accepted it and the other hasn't. But we don't put exert any pressure in that regard. But they're the biggest fear with the children is losing their friends.
Yeah.
And being ostracized, which yeah. kind of has already started with just because we're not as fundamentalist as we have been. Our closest friends kind of unfriended us.
Wow.
And that's just happened in the last two, 3 weeks.
It sounds like it doesn't take much for you to kind of be pushed outside. You know, or considered.
Yeah, yeah. You're right. I'd never really given that a lot of thought, but I'm experiencing it now. You realize, or you know, you think, wow, you know, here's somebody who's been just my closest friend, or you know, just been very close, very, very transparent, or very, you know, you feel like there's been this real closeness, and then overnight. It's gone, and you wonder, wow,
yeah.
what was ever there really in the first place? But it's painful, to realize that's the case. But on the other hand, it's all about fear, really, because the fear of the devil and the fear of being lost and the fear of hell and the fear of losing God's favor is so strong that it overpowers any feeling, any tendencies to kindness and generosity and willingness to accept people's differences and so forth.
Isn't that a selfish attitude?
Yeah, it's selfish, but on the other hand, they're just afraid.
Yeah.
You know, when there's that fire burning down there, man, you do anything to stay away from it.
Yeah.
Even if it means parting with your very closest friend, and because you have to protect, it's your duty to protect yourself and to protect your family and to protect your children from these dangers. And so in essence, we have become toxic. And so people have to take those defensive measures. So on one hand, you know, I can understand it, but it does, you know, it still
makes
sucks.
It easier. Yeah.
Yeah, it still sucks.
Not really. Yeah. It does suck.
So now it's a process of, you know, getting out there and finding a new circle of friends, a new circle of association. And so that's kind of where we are is looking out there, for people that one can associate with without having this whole religious idea dominating the friendship.
Yeah, you know, I know a group of people who have been in your situation, and I don't know if you've heard of the group yet or not. I'm gonna have to find the name so I say it right. But it's a group of people who used to be pastors. In fact, I've got a couple close friends who used to be preachers.
Uh huh.
who are now atheists.
The are you referring to the clergy project?
That might be it. I should know it off the top of my head, but I don't. I'm gonna have to look it up.
Okay. Yeah. Well, share that with me when.
And then yeah, like I said, I got a couple of my really close friends are former ministers, and I know that one of them is pretty bitter.
Uh huh.
Wasted so much time in on religion. You know, he's kind of upset about it. I wonder, do you feel bitter about the time you've spent in?
Yes and no. I feel that I've been duped, but on the other hand, I'm the first one in my family for several generations who figured it out and has stepped out. And so in that sense, I'm kind of proud of it. You can't pick your family. We are thankful for the life that we have, and we're thankful that our parents have given us life. And so I'm not going to complain that I was born and that I landed where I landed. You know, I'm happy that I landed.
Yeah.
So it just so happened that that's the context that I landed in, and I've had a hell of a ride. In terms of experience, life experiences, and there are stories that I could tell, but if I started telling stories, I would really be giving away much too much information.
That's okay.
At this point, yeah. But it's been, you know, so I don't look back with a lot of regret. I you know, the people write movies about stuff that we have done, yeah. And so. You know, I'm not a complainer, but on the other hand, I look forward to the future with great optimism. It's going to be a great, next part of my life.
Yeah. It sounds like, you're very optimistic, and that's a good thing. I like that. There's no reason not to be. Yeah.
That's right.
No reason not to be. Do you feel like you've got a whole new world in front of you? Is it opened up in front of you, or?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I can't read enough philosophy, and I can't read enough. And there's whole segments of society that we were in essentially living in a virtual ghetto.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
And so there are certain aspects of American culture and Western culture and human culture that we have been completely self-isolated from. Yeah. And now there's just a whole world of experiences out there to go and enjoy. So we're really, really excited about that. So yeah, it is. There's a whole new world out there.
Now, with your new look or your new outlook on the world, because I know that when you were a minister, you got gays are going to go to hell, right? And atheists are going to go to hell,
right?
And I don't know who else is going to go to hell. A lot of other people are going to go to hell, but you didn't associate with those people, those type of people, you know. So you kind of had, I don't want to speak for you, but I would assume that you had kind of an attitude about them, or kind of thought of them in a certain light.
Well, yes, except that I'm personally myself, I'm kind of not that personality.
Yeah.
So. I was very condemnatory of homosexuals, homosexuality, and but my personality is not such that I'm confrontational or feel a lot of animosity towards people.
Yeah.
So I never if I encountered someone who was, for example, you know, a flaming gay, it would be like, you know, your stomach is turning and you're in a sense you can't wait to get out of there, but you gotta be nice, and that's kind of the way it was. And I was let's see, well, I did interact with one really hardcore atheist. And he was the husband of one of my church members, and there was a lot of conflict in that home. And so I had extensive conversations with him, trying to persuade him of, you know, that about God and persuade him to be to let his wife have her freedom to, you know, to be part of our church, and we interacted quite a lot, but that was pretty much the only atheist that I really had a lot of interaction with, and he had no patience for religion and no patience for my persuasion.
Yeah.
I didn't get anywhere with him
like that.
But he was polite, you know. He was polite.
Oh, okay.
He suffered me, and I sure tried.
Yeah. Now I have to ask you: do you think there's a lot of debate among atheists about the best way to kind of come at religion? I guess would be the best way to put it. There's a lot of, you know, what they call militant atheists. I guess I would be considered a militant atheist. I don't really like the term. And then there's the kind of passive atheists that just kind of think let live and let live. And there's a lot of debate on the best way to kind of deal with religion. What's your opinion on that?
That's a great question. And I think what I think is there's a need and a place for both, or for very varied approaches. And some people are going to be reached by an in your face confrontation, and then others are going to be reached by a softer, more subtle approach. And so I think I really think there's a need for a whole variety of approaches to religion.
Yeah, glad to hear you say that, because I've been saying that for a long time, because that's what I've always believed is, you know. Atheists are critical of other atheists according to their style, you know. You're making us look bad. Oh, you're making us look bad, you know. Oh, you're too much of a wimp. Oh, you're too outspoken. And I always thought there was kind of, as long as you didn't do any harm to anyone, there wasn't really a wrong way to express your belief or lack of belief anyways. So
yeah, I agree with that. And for me, it was just simply information. Compounding or the building up of information to the point where it tipped, and then once it tipped, then it flowed very very quickly. There was one moment another important moment was when I discovered the website called WhyDoesGodHateAmputees.com.
Oh yeah, okay.
You've probably seen it, and I'm sure you're familiar with the argument. And man, that was a tough one to wrap my mind around.
Yeah.
But at the end of it, I had, you know, it's a very, very, at least for me, it was a very powerful, very, very persuasive argument.
Yeah.
And so that one was a key, was very important in the tipping point for me.
Yeah, that's interesting to hear. Because it's good to know that sites like that do have an effect on people every once in a while. Because I know that a lot of people that are working to kind of open people's eyes or to educate them feel like they're kind of just not doing anything, just kind of spinning their wheels. But it's always good to hear that stuff actually works on sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. What happens is you see that, and then you start writing, you know, arguments against it and arguing against it and fighting, and then – and, you know, you realize, well...
Yeah, realize the argument's hollow. Yeah.
And then you stop writing.
Yeah. Now, how did you... I've always had a problem with people who are religious. The suffering of children has always been a point I always bring up to them. Why would your God allow us the suffering of children? And how did you, explain that kind of thing where, suffering... People are dying right now of starvation somewhere in the world. You know, 5,000 children a day are dying of starvation somewhere. How did you kind of explain that or put that into, you know, what word am I looking for?
Yeah, it's the theodicy question.
Yeah, yeah.
The justice of God in the face of evil and human suffering. And the ultimate answer to that for many Christians is heaven, you know. So it sucks here for 5 years, 10 years, whatever. The pains of this present life cannot be compared to the joys of eternal life in heaven.
Yeah.
And so any suffering that a person is called to endure or that they have to endure, it's paid back in heaven. But the problem with that is that not everybody gets to go to heaven. And so the wicked suffer and they've never had the opportunity to hear the gospel or the opportunity to be saved. So how can a good God let bad people suffer? Well, they deserve to suffer because they're sinners. Well, but little children don't deserve to suffer because they're born in sin and so the arguments go back and forth. But
very strange argument.
It is. There's in the way that I dealt with that is to say that there are verses in the New Testament where it says that every man, every person has been given a measure of the Holy Spirit, and Jesus is the light that lightens every man. So the idea is that every human being has this spark of conscience or this light from God, and even if no one ever preaches to you, it is still possible to follow that light, and God will lead every one of his children who is willing to follow him into a saving relationship. So in heaven, there will be people who've never heard of Jesus, but there will be beginner's classes, and they'll learn very quickly where they are and how they got there. all those poor unfortunate children who are in the developing countries who are never heard and the ones that have good characters or tend towards God will save them, and the ones that are bad and even if they heard the gospel God wouldn't save them, then they're going to hell. That's
too bad for them. Right. I heard Pat Robertson go ahead.
Well, I was just saying that was my way of explaining that when I was asked that question.
I heard somebody ask Pat Robertson, if we go to heaven and some of our family members don't, aren't we going to be sad because our family members aren't there? And Pat Robertson told them that God in his wisdom will make your memories of your family members disappear when you go to heaven, so you won't miss them at all. You'll be able to have a good time in heaven.
Revelation chapter 20, 21. God's going to wipe away every tear from their eyes.
So
that's what it is.
I just thought that was an amazing thing for someone to say. I like to listen to Pat Robertson because he has that question and answer thing he does in the 700 Club. Just some of the insane, crazy answers that he says, or things that he says, it just amazes me, especially about atheists. He doesn't like us at all.
And probably for good reason.
Yeah. It's funny. Now, the evolution thing, did you always believe in creationism and deny evolution totally? And did that just part of your awakening? Is you all of a sudden went, hey, you know what? This does make sense.
Oh, yeah. I was a gap creationist.
Oh, God of the gaps.
Absolutely creationist through and through. In Genesis, there is wording that allows for creation of the sun, moon, and stars long, long time ago, and then lately, within the last 6,000 years or within the last 10,000 years, creation of the earth.
Uh-huh.
And the actual creation of the earth is more of a remodel job rather than a ex nihilo creation. So, and that then explains why you find rocks that are hundreds of millions of years and billions of years old. Well, they were made in the first creation, but then God created life and everything as we see it here post flood. We see it after the flood, but I believed in literal Genesis, including the worldwide flood.
Yeah, that flood's a pretty amazing story.
Yeah. And it is for the creationists, it is the answer to all problems.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how familiar you are with the inside conversations of creationism, but the flood becomes a really handy way of explaining all the problem, you know, answering a lot of objections to the mind of a believer.
Yeah.
And so we used it. We used it a lot.
Now, that's what I was going to ask you next is there kind of an undercurrent where you know that some of the things, even when you're just hip deep in what you're doing, that you know that some things don't quite sound right, but you've got to sell them to the people who are
I was always a very true believer. However, I was very unhappy with the fact that we were always on the wrong side of science, or it just seems like, darn it, every time there's some new scientific thing that comes out, we have to explain it. We have to come up with a way to understand this. Rather, why don't they ever discover something that helps us? So I was very disappointed, or that was unsettling.
Frustrating,
to me.
Huh?
But it's all a big conspiracy. And if they ever did find something that would help us, of course they wouldn't publish it.
Wouldn't tell you. Yeah, keep it a secret.
We have to soldier on and do our duty and protect people from these nefarious mongers of disinformation.
That is funny too. God dang it! Why can't they just come up with one thing that'll help us out here? We're always having to explain this crap.
Right. And of course, there are the society, the creation society, scientist societies, and they have conferences and talk very technical.
Yeah.
And sound very I'm not a scientist. I have very, very, very little, woefully little science and math in my education. It was all Bible. And so for me it all sounded very impressive.
Yeah.
How they would talk about the data and show how evolutionists are misconstruing the data and deceiving the whole world.
Yeah.
And the only reason that they won't accept God or accept creation is because they would then have to believe in God, and they're not willing to submit to God's authority, and so they have to teach a strong delusion to themselves to deceive themselves. And there's a Bible, there's a verse in the New Testament for that too.
Yeah. Nice. Now, did you ever think that heaven sounded like kind of a boring place to go?
No, man, I could not wait for heaven.
Wow, it just sounds boring to me.
It well in our fellowship or in our denomination, the idea is that heaven is heaven is the place where for eternity you discover new information and you're continually learning and you're fulfilling every dream and every ambition and every desire that you ever had.
Yeah.
as a human being. So it is to me, it was a very attractive idea, and couldn't wait.
Yeah, I can see it'd be okay for a year or so, but then I'd get kind of bored with some challenge going on. All right, we're actually coming up on our time. First of all, I want to thank you for speaking with me. It's been a very, very interesting conversation.
Yeah, well, thank you. You've had some great questions.
Do you have any parting words that you'd like to leave the listeners with?
Well, it's a brave new world out there, and I guess what I would really want to say to people is be nice to your believing friends and relatives. There are many of them are very just completely sincerely deluded. They really believe this stuff, and it is, and secondly, there's a lot of fear. It's primarily a fear mechanism that keeps them doing and believing what they believe. And so, by sharing information, if we can lead somebody to not be afraid, then they're going to I think that's the best way to lead someone into a rational approach to the world, as opposed to being dominated by religious fears.
Yeah. Now, I wanted to ask you one more thing. Do you think that if you would have had more science and math education, do you think it would have made you come to your conclusion sooner? Or
possibly.
Yeah.
That's a good point. I don't know. There are a lot of very scientific people in, who are believers.
Yeah.
And how they do it, I don't know.
I don't know how they do it either. That's a good point. I don't know.
Fear is a powerful motivator.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I think
desire.
That's the thing that atheists overlook or don't think about a lot of times is they get angry or they'll lash out or they'll be critical of people, and they don't realize that there's a lot of times it's not so much that those people are being stupid or being stubborn. It's the fear, and they can't get past that fear.
Right.
You know?
There's the fear of God. There's the fear of the devil. There's the fear of your family. There's the fear of society. There's the fear of jobs, and just all kinds of things are wrapped up in one's religion.
Yeah.
So it's a big move. It is really a big move to to make that step. And so I think another point is you would be surprised at how many closet atheists there are within churches, and
yeah.
And there's been research showing that there are a large number of disbelieving ministers in active ministry.
Yeah.
And everybody's afraid of telling everybody else. And I think at some point the whole thing's going to come apart. But,
think so?
I hope I live to see that day.
I think it's coming apart a little bit now, but yeah, I'd like to see it come apart a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, and it's for society, I think it's good. The same thing's going to happen that happens for an individual, where it's for forever. It seems like nothing's happening. Nothing's changing. And then the pressure builds up and there reaches that tipping point and the movement is exponential.
Yeah.
And it's like, here it another example of this, and I'm sorry if I take up too much time, but
the
look at how long it took for the modern mind or the new philosophy, the Newtonian way of looking at science and the new empiricism to take over the universities and take over the world.
Yeah.
It took a couple hundred years we don't realize that, but there were still Aristotelians and flat earthers very late. I don't know when the latest one was, but even into the 18th century and maybe even into the 19th century, these philosophies were still dominant in universities. And so, but then today,
yeah,
I don't think you would find a flat earther in a university, at least.
I don't think so. I think the only place you'd find one is as a troll on the internet these days.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah. And so I think the same thing is going to happen in society with religions. It's a long process, but at some point it's just going to become so absolutely obvious that it's like trying to claim that the world is flat. And I think evolution is going to be an important part of leading that way.
Because as the time goes by, it gets harder and harder to deny it, for everybody, even people who are just batshit off their rocker, having trouble arguing it because it just keeps getting reinforced over and over and over and over again,
Right. Right.
And besides that, the science, the technology that we're coming to these days, it's the same scientific method used to make this computer that I'm talking to you on as evolution uses to kind of prove itself. It's the same theory. It's the same theory or same, sorry.
The epistemology or the
yeah, you go
the
through the
method.
Steps,
And going back to the very first thing that I said, that is why I am confident in my atheism, is because of the epistemology, the method that it is based on. And so I can rest assured that this is right. Just like I can have confidence in electricity and light and computers and data and all this other stuff.
And gravity.
And gravity. Yeah.
Can't forget gravity. Well, it's nice to have you on our side, the dark side.
Well, thank you.
Hey, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. I appreciate it.
Well, I've enjoyed it. I've appreciated the conversation.
Yeah, keep in touch with me, will you?
Okay.
And
yeah.
I'd like to have you on again in a year or so.
All right. We'll look forward to it. And
whenever you're ready, you know, come back on and tell me some stories that you couldn't tell me this time.
Okay. Awesome. That sounds like a plan.
Okay. Thanks, man.
All right. Thank you.
There you have it. I'd like to thank the guest for coming on the show. I know he was a little bit nervous, but he did a great job. And I think it's a very, very interesting conversation. I hope you agree. I want to thank Flying Free 333 for the guest suggestion. An excellent suggestion. Thank you for listening to the podcast. I'll see you all at the Reason Rally, right? I'm going to keep reminding you about that until the day comes. Maybe I'll even get some audio from the Reason Rally. I'll carry around my little digital recorder. That'd be cool, wouldn't it? Well, yeah, I'll check on that. Okay, have a great day, evening, morning, afternoon, night, whatever it may be, and I'll see you on the next podcast. All right.